Welcome to the 6 a.m. Run Podcast. My name is Mark Paysant. I'm an avid runner, a certified personal trainer, a 6 a.m. run ambassador, and host of the show. Be sure to head over to the website, 6amrun.com, to sign up today to get 20% off of your first order. Now, let's start the show. Hello, welcome back to another episode of the 6 a.m. Run Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Paysant. Always a pleasure to have you a part of the show, to have you listening, to have you subscribing. Please share the show. If you have anybody in your life that thinks that this show would be beneficial for, please share it. Facebook, X, formerly known as Twitter. I still can't say X. That's weird. Instagram. I don't think anybody's still on MySpace, but just in case you are, if you can share it there, share it there. You never know who's there. LinkedIn would be great. But as always, the show is brought to you by 6 a.m. Run and 6amrun.com. Head over to that website to sign up to get 20% off of your first order and go over to your iPhone, your Android, your Google phone and download that 6 a.m. app. So we have a really good guest for you this week. We have John Lawyer. That is L-A-W-Y-E-R, if you're looking for him online. John, thank you so much for being a part of the show. Why don't you go ahead and just introduce yourself for our audience?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, Mark. I appreciate it. John Lawyer. My background, I spent a lot of time in the U.S. Army overseas in Kuwait, Iraq, and Afghanistan for about the first probably 12 years out of the first 15 years of my adult life, in and out of combat zones. And I was a counterintelligence special agent and came back, had a lot of healing to do after that. That took a lot of years. And eventually I found my way on a spiritual path. And I've been doing that for over 2 years now and started my own online nonprofit spiritual community. And I'm just looking to kind of help people help themselves. In a simple way, I call myself a spiritual guide. In a more technical way, I'm also kind of a higher purpose and transformational coach.
And let me start by first just saying thank you so much for your service. I have a brother who is in the Navy, and my dad is an Army vet. So thank you so much for your service. I lived up in the DC area for a long time with all the bases up there, and you couldn't throw a stone without hitting a couple lawyers and a couple military people. So everybody knows that about DC. But I wanted to jump right in because the word spirit, spiritual, however you want to use it, I mean, that word embodies a lot of stuff for a lot of people. And some people immediately hear it and think of the afterlife. They'll think of God. They'll think of whatever energy some people think of it. When you say the word spiritual, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, it is a hard question, right? So thanks for asking it. You know, spirituality to me is this fiercely individual thing. It's very personal to each person. And I think it's going to look different to each person. For me, it's my connection to that oneness. I call it the universe. It could be God. It could be the divine or Christ consciousness or the Brahman or the Tao. You know, you could call it a lot of different things, nature. But that's what it is to me. It's that connection to everything else. I believe that we're kind of all one. It's kind of a very pantheistic kind of idea, and that we're all connected. And that was, I kind of had a spiritual moment a couple years ago, and that was my main like understanding and clarity that I had, was that we're all connected.
And I would love to hear about that spiritual moment. And before we get into that, I wanted to ask you this because, you know, you have a military background. You have been in the Middle East. I think Kuwait was one of the places you had been, and some other places around that part of the world. You know, at this point, you hadn't had your spiritual awakening. When you were this white American man over on that part of the world, what feelings you had about you know, the people over there? Did you immediately look at them as equals? Was it a little different? Like, what kind of interactions do you have with the people in the Middle East?
My main pursuit during my time over there was to understand everyone. I felt, and one of the reasons I joined the army, I'd watched Lawrence of Arabia when I was a kid. I always wanted to do that, kind of interact with people, understand them, and figure it out. And I got to do that. I wore civilian clothes and got to live. I lived on the economy for a while. I spent a lot of time in and out of the embassy. And so I got to meet people. I got to meet Kuwaitis and Arabs. And my feeling about them was that they're just humans. And I, in the beginning of my time in the military, I truly believed, I was kind of idealistic young kid that believed in what we were doing, fighting terrorism and doing all that. You know, the longer I was in, the more I kind of realized that all war is political, you know, regardless of what the intent, stated intent is. So, but yeah, I throughout my time, I realized and I further realized as I moved forward that not just the people, the civilians that were innocent third parties, but even eventually the quote unquote enemy, we're all just people. We're all just humans living our life. And most of us on both sides, we're doing some pretty evil stuff. And that we should probably all accept that before we kind of start throwing all these rocks around.
That, I mean, I couldn't have said, for a person who's never been in battle himself, like I couldn't have said it any better. And that must have been like that transition must have been, you know, difficult but worthy at the same time. And this is where we kind of get into kind of your awakening, because as you stated on your websites, you know, you've gone from receiving, you say, Bronze Star for counterterrorism operations to walking through, and I want everybody to hear this, a swamp of sadness to an amazing path of spiritual healing and awareness. So what was that swamp of sadness?
For me, once I got done with those 15 years in and out of combat zones, you know, my last stint was 6.5 consecutive years in Kandahar, Afghanistan. I was lost, because when I came home, like, the whole world had changed, and like literally the styles of cars had changed and people had changed and news had changed. And so I didn't know who I was outside of this. I was really good at my job. I was really driven. People respected me. When I walked into a room, people wanted to know what I had to say. And so now I'm just, I don't have a job. I don't have any identity. I don't really know who I am. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how to heal. I knew I needed to heal. I didn't know how to do it. And so I was lost in the swamp of sadness. I had finally had time, because, you know, I had been working 100, 110 hours a week, 7 days a week for years. So now I had time to kind of think about all that. And so it was kind of a sad place.
I think it's easier for us to go into that and say, and go jump right into the mental discussion, like, oh, you know, working that much and doing that on a different part of the world and coming back, like, mentally, I think it's almost assumed that you were fried, but like physically, like 110 hours a week, maybe more, 7 days a week in a part of the country that you're not from, you're away from home. Like physically, what's going on with your body?
No, I never get asked that question. It is always the obvious mental part. So no, I appreciate you asking that. My body was messed up. I had migraines. I had Gulf War syndrome, they think. I was chronic fatigue. I look back and think, how did I live for 6.5 consecutive years in Kandahar, Afghanistan, and not? I barely went to the doctor. I didn't go to the dentist. I didn't, you know, all this stuff. And so, yeah, I was completely busted. I was busted mentally, obviously, but yeah, from a physiological standpoint, yeah, I was also really broken.
I'm trying, you know, as a civilian, I'm trying to like picture, but it's impossible for me to picture. It really is impossible for me to picture, because I've heard from so many other people, the movies don't do it justice. The shows don't do it justice. They kind of, you know, glorify the war zones and all that good stuff. But for people like me, if you could just describe what daily life was like for you, you know, with without pulling any punches, cutting any corners, like what was it like?
You know, it was through all my years. Like when I was in Kuwait, I spent a lot of time, like I said, with people and going in and out of the embassy. And I spent time in the desert talking to people. And when I was in Iraq, I spent a lot of time in an office. I went downtown. You know, we'd take convoys downtown to ministries to meet certain Iraqi ministers and stuff like that. Up and down around Irish, back and forth to the airport, you know. So there's always a threat of IDs or attacks, stuff like that. And in Afghanistan, I was an operations officer and intelligence specialist for kind of an asymmetric warfare unit. And I spent most of my time in like the operations center, like directing ops. And so I spent most of my time in an office, but, you know, we got rocketed all the time. There were direct complex attacks. Someone parked a truck bomb 400 meters away from us that went off, and it went off and it like shook our building and threw some shrapnel in and almost got one of our guys and blew windows out, but it didn't go off as much as it should have. There was a second part that didn't detonate. Otherwise I wouldn't be talking to you. That kind of stuff, you know, like, it's that low grade trauma that you have every day. And then there's all these like high grade events that happen. And, you know, I'm sending people out to capture people. I'm picking targets. I'm, picking targets for us to drop bombs on, that kind of thing. So it's very, it's just a very dark thing. It's very, you know, and as the longer I was a part of it, the darker it became. And I think that's okay for people to hear about the military-industrial complex. There's some dark stuff that happens, and that man, that wears on you. And we're like, it's like a firehouse. Like sometimes we didn't have the assets we needed to go do our mission because everyone's fighting for assets, like aircraft or drones or whatever. And so if we didn't have those, we couldn't find our targets. So if those assets became available, then suddenly we figure out where our target is, then we've got to like respond like a firehouse. So you never know when you're going to get torn out of bed and everyone's running around trying to get our guys outside the wire and into the field. So yeah, it was wild. It was constant adrenaline, constant. I was a war junkie, right? I was addicted to all that. I lived on the airbase. There's planes taking off, landing all the time, and helicopters, right? So like, it's exciting. Like it's this engaging atmosphere.
And I'm listening to this because I, you know, the work I've done later in my life, kind of learning about the human body and learning about the mind body connection and learning the effects of stress on the body and cortisol in the body. And if you're at that constant state of like high level, like you get to a point where your body is basically beating itself up. It's constantly in that high, like functioning state, which it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be used for actually those moments you need it. I mean, and I can't even like, I can just, when I go through like a day of that, like I crash for like 12 hours. Like I can't, my body just can't handle that. And I guess being in the military, your body starts to get, you know, used to it. I don't know if that's even a thing. I don't know if it gets used to it or not, but like is I'm trying to figure out, and we don't have to stay on this too long. I'm just trying, this might be for my personal research now. Like, does this just make you numb to like things that would scare me or things that would frighten me, like knowing, waking up every morning, like today could be the day an IED takes me out. Today could be the day I send one of my friends to have his last day on earth. Like, do you start to just get numb to that? Or is that the job of the military to take all of the feelings out of that time of their life?
I always had feelings. Like I personally, like a lot of guys do that, just try to numb themselves. I always had my feelings. I always kept my feelings. I thought that was important. I actually saw the drama in all of it. A lot of guys didn't like that necessarily, but and I think it kept me sharp. And it's like, because I had this job where, yeah, we're sending people to this target and we're going to drop a bomb on this place right here. So I had a job where I could never be wrong. And if I was wrong, then myself and my commander, because I was his main advisor, you know, we had to go answer for it. And that happened very rarely. And we never, while I was there the 6.5 years, we never lost a man or woman. We never lost a person in our unit. We lost some of our friends from sister units. But no, it was, I was kind of numb to it in a way. So don't get me wrong, there is an element of being numb to the stress. And there were times I went through cycles like with rockets. Like I've been through hundreds of rocket attacks. And there, you know, these rockets they're about a yard tall, probably 7 inches wide. And I've been through hundreds of them. And, you know, you never know, you know, they're shooting at the base and it's kind of random. And I went through periods where I would just walk around during rocket attacks when the alarms would go off and they would be inbound. And I would just walk around, not drop to the deck or anything. And I went through phases where I would hit the deck immediately and I was afraid. And I went through phases. And I'm not afraid to say that now. At the time, you know, you want to be that guy that just walks around, you know, like Robert Duvall in Apocalypse Now, right? You know, but sometimes you're that guy and sometimes you're not. And but most of the time for me, I always had to, people would always come to me for answers. I always had to give a yes or no. I had to make decisions in all these moments and I had to always be sharp. And so for me, it was, if I had to like numb myself to part of things so that I could function and make those decisions. And I think that's one of the reasons I was successful for so long in that job. For 6.5 years is because I wasn't afraid to make decisions and I was able to kind of handle that.
Yeah, no, I definitely understand that. That is one of the attributes and traits I'll go ahead and say it, like good leadership great leadership is you know, your decisions don't have to always be right, but you have no problem being the one to make them, because there's so many people in the world who they'll waffle at decision making.
Yes.
And they'll run away from it. I don't want to be responsible for any outcome, right or wrong. And
no, I love that you say that, because mm-hmm. every answer that a lot of people gave in Afghanistan, like if we wanted to go do something, like say we wanted to go do a creative op to like, because our job was to protect Kandahar Airfield, which was the single busiest runway on planet Earth at the time. It was a big job. And if we wanted to go do something, we had to go ask someone else, can we do this? And they'd be like, the first answer we always got was no, because no one wanted to make a decision. So like even in the military, and also true, like you're talking about, of just the normal world, corporate world, leadership, people don't want to make decisions. And so those people that are willing to make, and that like you said it perfectly, you have to be willing to be wrong. You have to accept the fact, I'm going to make a decision. It may not be the best decision, but it's the decision.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's so funny. I was coaching a 3-on-3 basketball tournament for one of my girls and her friends. And one of the girls on it, and they're the only girls team, 9 and 10 years, only girls team. And one girl was really tiny and she wouldn't shoot the ball. She was afraid to shoot it. And I was like, listen, one of two things is going to happen. It's going to go in or it's not going to go in. Like that's, you know, sometimes we think the decision we make is going to like have, like the earth is going to blow up immediately and life is going to just end forever. We put so much just pressure, drama, emphasis on this one decision. And sometimes it's just, hey, just make it. Like just try it. Just make it. So thank you for going to such detail with that stuff and being vulnerable about that. Cause I love that you said, I'll say that now. Like I can say that now because I know what you're talking about. It's like, I'm not going to be the one male in this base that decides today's the day he's going to talk about feelings or be scared or be, I'm not going to be that guy. And I don't blame you. Like I don't blame you one bit. So, but I appreciate you going to that level of detail. So now you talked about, you've gotten out, the world has changed, cars have changed, probably clothes have changed, all these have changed. The people who you knew and your family, your friends, they've grown into different people and you kind of feel lost and you go on this spiritual awakening. Is this something that you kind of started on your own or did you have someone to help you with this? Did someone kind of push you in the right direction or just kind of come to you one day and you said you had to do something different?
I had a VA therapist that she was into Eastern medicine and like mindfulness meditation and stuff like that, being present in the moment. And she taught me that very early on in my time that I was back. And it didn't take deeply, but I think it started things moving in my mind that years later would end up helping me quite a bit. But really, I wasn't on an intentional spiritual path that I knew of. I think we're always on a journey, even if we don't know it. But I wasn't really conscious of that. And so when I kind of had my like moment of clarity or awakening or whatever you want to call it, it was very spontaneous and it was very unexpected for me.
And we're all glad that you were able to do that. And we hear so many things about the VA, but I'm glad that you got the help that you needed specifically at that time. Looks like it was somehow, some way it was planned specifically for you. I don't know if that was, you know, the earth shifting in the right direction, but it looks like it happened correctly for you. And now you're on the spiritual journey and you kind of, like you said, you call yourself a spiritual guide. You know, what have you learned about yourself through all this? Because you do talk about self-love and living in the moment and being present. But through these years since you were in the military, because everybody kind of asks, I think it's assumed like it's like, oh, I learned this about myself in the military. I learned I could be tough and I learned I could be disciplined and all this stuff. And that I think that's an assumed question and answer. I want to know, like, what have you learned about yourself throughout this spiritual journey you've been on?
I've learned that I like that you said self-love. You know, I go back to that a lot. I if we don't take care of ourselves, we are no good to anybody else. We're definitely not good to ourselves. We're also not good to anybody else. Like, if we don't take care of ourselves, our spouse is not going to be happy. Our children aren't going to be happy. Our community and members, our coworkers and peers, no one's going to be happy. Our friends that we hang out with. So when we take care of ourselves, we're not just lifting ourselves up. We're lifting the whole world around us. That's the main lesson that I've learned. I think that, like, this radical, you know, whole all in love of self is the most important thing that we can do. And self-love is this all encompassing thing as well. It seems simple. It's forgiveness of yourself, others as well. It's non-judgment of yourself and others, but there's letting go of all that, the stuff and attachments that you have and the fears and the past and your attachment to the future. Oh, what's going to happen? You know, who cares? Like, the future, how often do we end up at the destination we set out to end up at, you know?
And you couldn't have said any better. And that's been the journey I've been on the last couple of years. And of course, if you listen to my other show, you've been hearing about it and hearing about my thoughts on, you know, energy in, energy out, and living in the moment and just making sure that you can, like, seriously, like, I'm going to talk about myself because in my past, I tried so hard to get to this certain destination. And one of two things happened. I'll be honest with you. Either I got there and I was like, why was I trying to get here the whole time? Or the second is like, I didn't make it there. And thank God I didn't, because it's not the journey I needed to be on. And I think a lot of the people listening to this right now, of course, I told you before the show, we have a lot of parents that listen to this. We have a lot of fitness professionals. We have a lot of people who are on their own journeys that may hear this and be like, wait a second, you know, John's on to something. I'm taking snippets here and learning things there. So, you know, when you talk to people, when you help people, when people come to you and they might not ask for guidance, they might not ask for help or assistance. They just say, hey, John, can we just talk? Like, I've been going through these things and I would love just someone to listen to, someone to throw some ideas off of. What kind of work do you do with people? How do you help them? And what can they expect when they converse with you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I first of all, I think people are whole inside, whether they know it or not. So I think it's about working with people in a way that gets them to see that light and wholeness inside. They have answers they don't even know they have. And their answers are going to be very different from someone else's. And so it's a very personal thing for each person. And I think my job as a guide or a coach is to figure that, help people figure it out for themselves, help people help themselves. And that's my higher purpose. That's my Dharma. That's what I believe. So the reason I say that is because I want people to know what their higher purpose and Dharma is. What are you meant? What's your purpose in life? What are your values and beliefs? What do you want to do every day? What lights you up? And how do you align that? Once you figure that out, there's ways to figure that out if you don't already know it. And if you do know it, how do you align that with your day-to-day life? How do you make sure you're embodying that as you go and live life? And there's that idea of that alignment of mind, body, and soul. And is that happening? Are you living kind of in alignment with those different phases of your life? Because if you are in alignment, you're going to be a more joyful, happy person, a more calm and peaceful person.
I pause there because I had a realization that I wanted to kind of get your perspective on, because I know I've had this conversation with others before, specifically friends, where you'll have man or woman, person who gets married and they believe that their purpose now is for their spouse. You have a person who has kids. My purpose now is for my kids. You have a person who goes through life and has a sick parent. My purpose now is for my parent. People who have jobs, my purpose is to be the best employee, and so on and so forth. We all get the picture. And we get to the end of one of those purposes and we jump to another. And I personally believe, I'm not the guest this week, but I personally believe that you said it, people are whole inside, but we feel empty. And we're always looking to like fill it with some type of purpose. You know, you've talked about higher purpose or Dharma, and that's Dharma for people looking up and wanting to know more about it. But, you know, what's your perspective on that? Because what you're talking about might not, you know, on paper, might find your higher purpose. Okay, I'm going to go home and think. But it's not something that happens overnight. Like, you have to, there's work and discipline in these things. So how do we find that higher purpose?
Yeah, that's the question. I think when people don't know what their higher purpose is, the first thing we can do is sit down and say, maybe a first step is write down what your values and beliefs are. And people might have a hard time doing that. Be like, oh man, that's a good question. Like, I haven't thought of that. Like, what are your values and beliefs? Not what society believes, not what your parents believe, not what your coworkers believe or your job. What do you believe? What are your values and beliefs to you? What do you need or want in the world? And what lights you up? These are questions we kind of have to ask ourselves and work through. And, you know, I always ask in a very simple way. If you're going to do something tomorrow and you can't wait to go to bed and do it, like, what's that? What is that thing? Like, cause that's probably something close to what your higher purpose is going to be. And it's easy to say my higher purpose is my spouse or my higher purpose is my children. That's a big one, right? It's my kids. But you can love your kids. You can be your kids can be everything to you, and your higher purpose can be something very different from your children. And it often is going to be something different from your children. You can see it as, okay, my higher purpose is over here. And if I'm living that, I'm a better parent to my children. I'm a better spouse to my wife or husband. And so it takes, I think you have to slow it down. You know, you have to get introspective. You have to ask yourself questions, and you have to answer those questions honestly, right? Because we're not always honest with ourselves, right? This is deep. I'm going to be honest with myself. I'm not going to kind of BS myself here. I'm going to actually give real answers.
And that, for a lot of us, that might hurt. That might sting. That might cut deeper than we're ready for. But, you know, last time I checked, you know, I mean, progress, you know, takes some change, and progress takes some, I don't want to be too cliche and do the breaking of the eggs and the omelet. And you understand what I'm, everybody understands right. What I'm trying to say. It went right to my head. I'm like, I'm not going to say this out loud because it everybody says it. So, but you're absolutely right. And I love having these type of shows where I think I'm getting a lot of it. I know the audience is getting a lot out of it. And I think this is one of those kind of palate cleansers where it's like, okay, let's just slow down. Let's have a discussion, which might be deeper than the other ones we've had, but let's talk about it. So now in your life, you've kind of, what it sounds like is you've kind of gone through phases, you've kind of gone through your time and put in your dues, and you're still, you know, working on yourself today. What is your life like today? Like, mentally, physically, what are you doing to make sure, you know, you're not that same John Lawyer who was in a constant state of fill in the blank, whatever you want to say, anxiety, fear, whatever you want to say in the first 6.5 years, you're not that guy who was consistently in that swamp of despair or I forgot what you, I say that correctly? Swamp of sadness. So we've kind of moved into this portion of your journey. Who is, you know, John Lawyer today?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's one I don't think about necessarily a lot, but like I try to live my purpose every day, because if I'm living my purpose, I'm aligned and I'm going to be happier. But it's about, when I talk about letting go of things, the past still creeps up on me. So I have to loop back and I have to let go again. And if I get anxious about the future and, oh, what's going to happen? Am I going to meet this goal? Am I going to do this thing that I want to do? Then I have to say to myself, hey, man, you're not enjoying the journey each day. So let go of that attachment, that future thing. Like, have that goal, and you can do yourself, your future self, a solid and do something today to help that future self out. But like, don't get overly invested in that destination and that tomorrow, because the future is so uncertain. And if I'm living today, if I'm enjoying the journey, then that's this beautiful thing. So it's listening to my own advice, the things that I teach. I have to do it myself. I have to put in the work to loop back around to myself and check in and say, have you let go of this stuff? Are you practicing gratitude? Are you grateful for what you have and the family and your health and all the opportunities that you have? Am I doing it with great? Do I have grace for myself? You know, am I saying, I'm not perfect. I'm not going to live this fully embodied, mindful way all the time. So how do I intersect my spiritual path with this concrete reality I move with and through every day? That's a huge part of what I do.
Are we alone in the universe?
Absolutely not. I believe I am that, and you are that, so we're that together. And so I think whether we think that there is this anthropomorphic God, or if it's, like I said, the universe or nature or whatever, I think that we're not alone. We're deeply connected to everything in the universe. We're literally stardust. I mean, from a scientific perspective, you can even get down in through, if you're an atheist or whatever, that, you know, consciousness can't be explained. Scientists cannot explain consciousness. They know it exists. They postulate and they believe in the extreme likelihood that consciousness exists, but they cannot explain it. So, and they believe that, you know, quantum physicists believe that consciousness sits under matter, right? That consciousness is creating matter. And that, you know, when you look at that, like, it's just pretty interesting thing.
I love that answer, because I've become like the brain I have now. I literally wish I had it sometimes in like high school, because I'm so, I so want to learn so much now. I'm in that growth mindset all the time now, where like I don't really watch sitcoms or shows. Like I sit on like NASA videos and like, you space exploration, Neil deGrasse Tyson type stuff, where we're intersecting science and nature and spirituality, and where did it all start? Is it one big circle where there's no end, no beginning type thing? And there's so many questions when you start getting down to it. Like, there's so many questions not only do we not know the answer, we don't know how to ask the question.
Yeah.
Like it gets that deep sometimes. But people will get caught up on if they got the newest iPhone, which is just amazing to me. Like, and I have a 10 and 8 year old, and we're experimenting with phones. They don't have any service, so they have just the shelves of them with Wi-Fi at home. And it's like they light up when they get this material possession. And I'm like, do you understand like what's out there? And of course I answer, I'm like, no, they don't. They literally don't. They're learning. They're 10 and they're 8. But for someone who wants to go on this spiritual journey with you, they're listening. They may find you online. They say, oh, Dharma sounds great. I want to live in that moment. I want to have a higher purpose. Like, what are some things that people should just know? Because this is a very broad question. I know it is. I'll let you go anywhere you want to go with it. But like, this isn't something, and you kind of talked about it after your VA therapist, and you got to a point where kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, this is where I want to be. Like, are you asking people to give up on all material possessions? Are you asking them to, you know, follow you down this dark road and test you, like, you know, all this stuff? Or, you know, what is the thing that you want people to know about starting this journey?
That's a really good question. I always say most of us are not going to be monks living in a monastery in the foothills of the Himalayas, right? So I think that's the first step. Know that. And so you can have really major change in your life in a good way. And change is, I don't believe in absolutes, but change is probably the only absolute I believe in the universe. We're always changing. The universe is always in motion. So decide to accept that and move with the universe and have that rhythm and find your rhythm. And you can still be a driven professional and be spiritual. You can still be a driven professional and live in the moment. You'll probably be more successful in your career. You'll probably have more free time in your career because you probably have good boundaries and take time for you. You know, all these good things will happen when you're more aware and intentional about how you're living. And so, yeah, it's about finding your higher purpose. And I, you know, I saw say that there's a transformational aspect of it from a coaching perspective or a spiritual guide. It's that alignment of mind, body, soul. So it could be driven professional. It could be a stay-at-home parent or anybody in between that wants to be more present for themselves, be a better spouse, be a better parent, be a better friend, and just lift up themselves, lift up the world. That's how we make the world a better place. And your life's going to improve. I don't think it. I know it. And you can do it. I think that's anybody can make this change. And it's not as hard as it sounds. It's hard. There's work that has to be done. But being aware, being intentional, having this peaceful thing. Sometimes people think like, oh, I have to be a monk to do that. I've got to do all this work. I got to be, you know, there's years of work. Not necessarily. I don't think that's the case. It takes work, but it's not. The path is a very short path. It's only through ourself that path exists. So it's about getting through that path through yourself. It's very short for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think, you know, so many of us, you know, read Jay Shetty's book and they were like, I have to think like a monk. I have to be a monk. And
he's great.
He is great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not. Listen, Jay.
But I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying.
He's not a monk anymore. I mean that should be part of it. But that's
very telling. Yeah,
very telling. Yes. But I know what you're saying because I think a lot of people try to put themselves, and I was this person once in my life, try to put themselves on such a complimentary do good journey where I'm going to be the best this, the best that, like I'm gonna, and the whole time you're doing this, like you're just pouring from an ever draining cup. Like you're consistently, and it's like, hey, are you the best attorney, the best doctor, the best garbage man, the best whatever? Are you the best husband? Are you the best wife? Are you the best, and blah blah blah. And then it's like, hey, have you been a best friend to yourself? It's like, wait, no, what? No, don't hit me with that. And it's like, yeah, like, why not? Like, what? I want you to answer this because this is why is it so hard for people to be nice to themselves? Why is that?
We're taught from a very young age to take care of others, to be there for others, and we're very rarely taught to take care of ourselves. We're taught to be a hero or do this, you know, and we're taught that heroes are like the ultimate thing that we should strive to do and be. And that's not it. It's that we're not taught that. That's why we're that way. In society, they want us to get on the conveyor belt of life and just be content there. And that conveyor belt of life can be warm. It can be kind of inviting. It can be kind of easy, but there's a lack of self-love. There's a lack of self-awareness there. And when you get off that conveyor belt of life, suddenly you're like, oh, wow, there's a lot of stuff out here I haven't seen. That's really cool.
You're absolutely right because I grew up in Catholic Church and I've told people before, there was this one guest father, that priest that came in and he was using some Whitney Houston lyrics in the, it was lyrics where she said, where she was, I can't remember the lyrics now. I wish I could, but it's like the love she has for herself or something like that was the biggest love of them all. And he like stopped it. He's like, can you believe this? Like, no, the best love we have is for others. And like that was ingrained in me at like 10 years old. That was ingrained in me. And I was like, okay, this guy is saying it. Must be true, because, you know, young kid in the church, like everything is canon, like everything. So I'm like, I grew up, everything is like what he says goes. And I think you're absolutely right. A lot of us, we don't have that story, but a lot of us here to give to others, you know, don't be selfish. And that's where we get that self-love is not selfish. Self-care is not selfish. It's actually the most, one of the most unselfish things you can do.
Yes.
And I think more people need to hear. I know some parents are out there looking at, like, right now. They're like, no, what are you talking about? Like, I can't. Like, Timmy has baseball practice and little Johnny or Samantha has, you know, this practice. And who would I be if I just took care of myself? It's like you'd be a good person. Like, you would literally be a good person. So, sorry for going off on a tangent there. But I definitely want people to learn more about you. So if someone is getting online, how do they learn more about what you do? How do they follow you? How do they get more information on the things you're involved in?
Sure. Our main website is kishar.org. It's kishar.org. And that's the entrance to our community. We have a great community, you know, discussions every day. There's an app that goes along with it. It's super inviting and warm and safe place. That's where our, you know, entrances for spiritual guidance and coaching, you know, our sessions, individual one-on-one stuff. We have a YouTube channel that's pretty great. That's free and open to the public. It's got a great place to kind of explore your spirituality and figure out some stuff. And most of our spiritual handles or our social media handles are Kishar Spiritual, at Kishar Spiritual. And please check it out. Know that, you know, you can change is easier than you think. And once you start, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, because it definitely is. And like I say all the time, you can stop the show right now and head over to the show notes to get links to that. And there's a lot of, I've been perusing the website for a couple of days now, getting ready for this. And, you know, there's programs, there's exclusive content, forums, courses, all that good stuff. Some plans starting here that are not that expensive, and you can try a couple for free. And seems very inclusive, very inclusive. Not going to get kicked out because you look different or worship a different God or anything like that. This is a space for everybody. So I appreciate that. So, and usually this is the part of the show where I said, thank you, you have a great day, and you say the same thing and we get off. But I kind of want to just ask this last question. And I've asked this of a lot of people in the fitness space who are trying to get people to better themselves or get into their fitness journey. And, you know, it's, they see that first step is so difficult, blah, blah, blah. But I kind of want to twist it a little differently for you. I want to ask you, like, a person listening to this, and they say, you know, I love this conversation. John sounds great. I totally appreciate what he's saying, but people just don't understand like how busy I am. They don't understand how much I have going on. You know, you might be in the business world and say, I have this many projects to do. I have, you know, the twins have this. I have this hobby. I'm on the PTA. And then I have to go home, part of the HOA and any other acronym you can think of. Like, I have so much that I am responsible for. There's no way I could start this journey right now. I just can't do it. Maybe later. To that person who says, I don't have time, I don't have energy, I don't have the space, what do you say to them?
I say that we have more time than we think, first of all. Well, a lot more time than we think. And also, when you start something like this, where you suddenly start having this groundedness and this centeredness in your life, all this other stuff makes more sense. It's more organized. Your life slows down. You're able to prioritize what's really important. Some of that may be work. It really might be. Some of it's going to be family. Some of it's going to vary. But you're going to have, you're going to live a better life. You're going to have a more focused life. You're actually going to find that you have more. And I'm, when I say more, I don't mean more time. I mean more everything.
It's amazing what stress, how it really blurs the mind, and we can. And once you have that first taste of clarity, in that you get more done, and you have more free time, and you have more time with your family, and it's like everything is done with intention and purpose. It feels so different. So I appreciate that answer. Again, John Lawyer, you can head over to the show notes to get to his website. It's Kishar, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Kishar.
Kishar. So it's KISHAR.org. John, thank you so much for being a part of the show. I've really had a wonderful time having a discussion with you. And if you don't mind, I'd love to bring you back on in the future, maybe even have you on the other show. But I think this is a conversation that more of us need to have, or more of us need to listen to, because, I mean, time is fleeting. And what's the purpose of all this if we don't have joy in the things that we do? So, and I have a feeling right. That's what you're trying to help people with. So thank you so much for all you do. You have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
Thank you, as always, for listening to the 6 a.m. Run podcast. Again, I am your host, Mark Paysant. Please like and subscribe to the show so you don't miss any of this amazing content. If you can, we would love if you left us a review. Remember to follow us online and use hashtag 6amrun to connect with the greatest group of runners and fitness enthusiasts in the world.